That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Ah.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Hello and welcome to The Price of Football, the show that looks at the money behind the beautiful game and says bienvenue Patrick, or est-ce Vincent, et bonne chance. You are going to need it, mate. I'm something pleasingly carry on about that. Yeah, bonne chance. I'm Kevin Day, he is Liverpool University's Kieran Maguire, and this is Newsday. That's how Sky Sports News would introduce the pod. Liverpool University's legendary Kieran Maguire has some amazing updates on amortisation in Bulgarian football. shall we get on with the actual news, Kieran? I'm afraid if this pod had a title, it would be The Usual Suspects. Four of our favourite clubs appear frequent. Yes. I'll use the word frequent too quickly there. I meant frequencies. Sheffield Wednesday, Kieran, let's start in South Yorkshire. Sheffield Wednesday appear to have paid some, but not all, player wages. Does that mean they've paid some players all the money or all players some of the money?
They've played some players all of the money. This is a story which has come from the Sheffield newspapers. And it appears to be those players who are still in contract have been paid in full, because this will reduce their opportunity to walk away from the club. Because I think we'd mentioned before that Sheffield Wednesday had been a bit hit and miss with regards to making wage payments. And under FIFA rules, they are entitled to effectively dismiss the club. As it were. And clearly those players have value in the transfer market. So it looks as if the strategy has been to pay those players for whom the club still felt had value, and those players who were out of contract at the 30th of June and weren't going to be obliged to be paid in future months, they're going to have to wait further. So I suspect the Professional Footballers Association will have been involved with regards to this. I think my understanding is that Delfon Chancery, who is the club owner, the money to pay sort of the gaps in the wages has not necessarily come from him. And I can say no more than that, but does appear to have come from a source close to him. So that's where we are. And as we are recording this at 4 o'clock on Tuesday, so we can't make any references to England and the semi-final of the Euros. But as we started to record, Sheffield Wednesday have just published their financial results, and boy, have they lost a load of money in 2020. And their wage bill, looking at this, and I'm just sort of quickly going through a series of numbers, their wages are considerably higher than their revenues. And this was, of course, in the pre-COVID era. That perhaps explains why they've had these cash flow challenges with regards to paying player wages.
Yeah, that's interesting that you think it might not be the owner paying the wages. But I have to say to any of our overseas listeners who have often wondered what the quaint English word chunter means, then what they need to do is listen into a podcast that's just about to start when a well-known football expert checks his phone and sees that Sheffield Wednesday have released their figures literally as I'm about to say hello and welcome to The Price of Football. That was some world-class chuntering going on.
It was, and I do have three messages from journalists in Yorkshire to say, Kieran, any chance you could come on and have a chat?
Yes, I have to say to these clubs, Kieran's, there's no way on God's earth any of these clubs can know what time we're recording the pod. But Kieran is starting to get paranoid that somehow one of us is being hacked. I think you think the Baroness might be leaking information for money?
Well, as long as that's all she does for money, I'm quite happy.
I don't know why I left a pause there. That's my fault. That's entirely my fault. I apologise to anybody out there listening to that shameful middle-aged behaviour. From Sheffield, Kieran, to Swindon, who have been increasingly taking up our time recently. And unfortunately, we have two news stories involving Swindon Town. Firstly, Clem Morfuni and the Axis Group have accused Lee Power of providing misinformation over the sale of Swindon Town.
Yes, unfortunately, we're having a bit of a bitch-slapping exercise between the two parties involved. For people not familiar with where we are at present, Swindon Town are presently owned by Lee Power. He is reluctant to sell to a guy called Clem Morfuni, who is based in Australia, I think, at present, and his Axis Group. The two used to be big buddies. You know, yeah. I've seen pictures of them at the matches together. Clem Morfuni's company, I think, used to sponsor Swindon Town. But what has happened is there appears to be an obligation on Lee Power's behalf to now sell his shares to Clem Morfuni. He then went, or Lee Power then went via the Swindon Town website to say, well, you know, I'm willing to sell, but he's not come up with the cash. And Clem Morfuni has been, again, fighting. And this is all taking place through social media and through the media, which is a little bit unedifying. Clem Morfuni saying, well, you put some barriers in the way and things aren't, as far as I'm concerned, my legal team, I've deposited the money with them. So the only thing that's stopping is your legal side putting up further barriers. And of course, the big losers in this is everybody else connected with Swindon Town, because wages have gone unpaid, as we discussed last week. Yeah. People don't know whether they've got jobs. The club hasn't got a manager. It hasn't got a director of football. It doesn't appear to have a chief executive. As ships go, it's about as rudderless as you can possibly get. And you know, the season is starting in just over a month. So it looks as if you know, Lee Power's effectively taking a scorched earth policy to his departure from the club and trying to make things as unpleasant for whoever inherits it as possible. And that's a shame. You know, if you have got disagreements with somebody in business, sort it out between yourselves. Don't make the fans, the employees, and the everybody else connected with the club suffer as well.
Well, it simply wouldn't happen in any other business. If, you know, if back in the day, Mr. Marks and Mr. Spencer had a massive row, they wouldn't take it out on the customers. They wouldn't, you know, they wouldn't suddenly start charging the customers more or removing things from the shop windows. It would be, it's only in football that it seems that the customers, and that's the only time I ever use that phrase, it's only in football that the customers are treated this way. But two things, Kieran. We spoke last week and the week before that about Swindon, and we spoke about the High Court ruling that Lee Power had to sell some shares or put some shares up for sale. But did they specify to who? Did they say that those shares have to be offered to Clem Morfuni? And secondly, is Lee Power reluctant to sell full stop, or is he just reluctant to sell to Clem Morfuni?
Having read bits and pieces, and I'm also very grateful to Swindon Town Supporters Trust, who have been keeping everybody informed and doing a sterling job. It looks as if the judge's ruling was that Lee Power had to sell the shares to Clem Morfuni at a particular price. Right. And Lee Power feels that there is an alternative offer at a higher price, which he's being prevented from dealing with. So that appears to be the crux of his unhappiness at present. And that's driven him to take the action that he has, i.e., you know, if... if he means if through his actions it means that Clem Morfuni has to go and pick up a shortfall in wages, then so be it. But it's we hope that what we perceive to be professional people, we expect football owners to have a they don't have the greatest of reputations, some of which is warranted, the vast majority of which is not. But the way that Lee Power is behaving really is not particularly elegant. And I just hope that the EFL are monitoring this, just in case Lee Power rocks up at another football club.
Mm. And still in Swindon, I'm afraid, the club also faced court action over unpaid rent on the county ground. I mean, again, is this part of Lee Power's scorched earth policy or an oversight? Or
If it is an oversight, it's a long-winded one, because I think it's something like 18 months for which the rent has not been paid. We can all forget to pay the odd bill now and then, deliberately on purpose.
Yeah.
But this is a long-running issue. I think it's come from the council, and they've just reached the point of, we've asked nicely, we kept asking nicely, and now we're going to have to take further steps. So you look at the main costs for any business, which, especially the football business, it's going to be employment costs and property costs, and Lee Power has come up short on both of those.
Do we have any idea how much is owed in unpaid rent?
Not certain, unfortunately. I'll dig out the numbers in due course.
But it's likely, if it's over 18 months, it's likely to be a substantial amount of money, and that's
absolutely.
There's also a level of patience from the council that many private landlords wouldn't have shown. So, not happy times for Swindon Town fans at the moment. But as we've seen in the past with Wigan, who knows? There could be a happy solution. Let's hope we're able to announce that soon.
Yes.
And we've had Sheffield Wednesday, Kieran. We've had Swindon. So where else? Where else could we be going next, everybody? Say it with me, boys and girls. Say it loud and say it proud. We're going to the East Midlands, and we're not going to Nottingham Forest, everybody. We're going to Derby County. And Derby County, I like the way this has been phrased very carefully by Guy, may have found a bit more profit from the sale of Pride Park. Now, I'm no expert, but luckily, Kieran, you are.
I'm not an expert.
How do you find a bit more profit? I mean, I once found a fiver in a pair of jeans that I'd forgot had a fiver in coming back from Edinburgh, and I literally thought this is the best thing that's ever happened to me. And of course, despite Ali's advice, I went out and spent it on a cheap bottle of wine, because why would you not? If you found yourself with a fiver you didn't know you had, you have to spend it, because that's God telling you to spend the money. But how do you find a bit more profit?
I went through the 60-page report on the disciplinary committee with regards to Derby County and their fallout with the EFL with regards to amortization. Yeah. And I went through and that was quite detailed, and it wasn't a page turner, let's be honest, apart from possibly for me. But looking at the documentation, there was a little sentence which came from the Derby County chief executive, which was just a throwaway line, which said, "Oh, by the way, when we reported a £41 million profit from the sale of Pride Park in our 2018 accounts, that may have been understating the true amount of the profit." Mm. And I thought, oh, lordy, lordy! This is worth investigating further, because the position is, of course, is that Derby County have to resubmit their profitability and sustainability calculations with regards to 2016 to 2018, and my calculations are that I don't know the exact figures, is that they're going to be close to the limit. But I went through the almanac. I went through the collection of old sets of Derby County financial statements, and I went all the way back to 2008. And what they'd done there, that they'd revalued the stadium by £30 million. So When they sold it in 2018, they said the cost in the books is 40 million, and we've sold it for 80, so therefore we've taken a profit of 40. And everybody went, okay, that's fine. But if you actually go way back, it looks as if and it's a bit like, let's say that you had a house worth 100 grand. You got an estate agent around a few years ago, and he said, it's 130. So therefore you think, oh, I made 30 grand profit. Mm. And then you sell it for 180. Now, what Derby have done, they've said, well, the profit is the 180 less the 130 it was last valued at. We've taken that profit of 50 to the accounts. But actually, they sold it for 180 and it originally cost them over 100. And, you know, it's just an amazing coincidence, I'm sure, that this extra 30 million pounds are now saying, oh, well, we revalued it in 2008. Could we potentially put that into our P&S calculation? And if so, even if the EFL do query the figures, and Rick Parry presently is, he's a bit like Sideshow Bob from The Simpsons with regards to his pursuit of Bart Simpson. He's a man that has a long-term grudge against certain people. And Derby County appear to be one of them. So if you look at what they did, what the EFL have done with practically every case they've lost, they've appealed. Is this Derby saying, well, even if you do appeal, by the way, we just found an extra 30 million, so which could keep them on the right side of the equations. But it was genuinely a fascinating read if you like that type of thing. But I'm hoping that at least 99.99% of the population, they've all got personalities, and that type of thing, that type of read isn't something that is up with Shakespeare in terms of the appeal.
Kieran, that's what you're there to read these things for us.
Yes,
you're there to throw yourself in front of these written hand grenades. And I've known you long enough to know that when you say this could be coincidence, what you're really meaning is this is nowhere near a coincidence in any way, shape or form. There's a 1% chance it's coincidence, but I've seasonally adjusted that to there's no chance this is a coincidence. Well, Kieran, where else could we be heading now? We've had Sheffield Wednesday, we've had Swindon, we've had Derby. There will be a lot of people in the northeast out there with an accumulator praying that we're heading to Newcastle next. Well, I'm afraid we're not. Not next,
just yet.
Anyway. We are on the way to Newcastle, but via the EFL. And I'm not entirely sure of the ramifications of this, Kieran, which is why I've added a note at the end of it. But EFL clubs have voted to ban stadium sale profits from financial fair play calculations in future. I literally can't keep up with what's good or bad anymore, Kieran. Is that good or bad?
Well, you see that horse far away in the distance. Well, I'm going across to my nearest stable and I'm going to slam a door shut and that's sorted. This is the reason why we have these issues with Sheffield Wednesday and Derby County, to name but two, is because they have sold their stadiums effectively to the club owners. And they are perfectly entitled to do that legally. Before 2016, if they had done that, those profits would have been excluded from their FFP calculation. So, yeah, they could do it, but there's no benefit in doing so.
Mm.
For reasons which have never truly been explained, but, I'm certainly this is genuinely more cock-up than conspiracy. In 2016, both the Premier League and the EFL changed the rules and said, if you do sell your stadium, you can now keep those profits in your financial fair play calculations, which, to say it makes a mockery of, they also remember, of course, they changed the name of the rules in 2016 to profitability and sustainability. Now, nothing screams less sustainability than selling the biggest asset that a football club has to somebody else. These are the rules. They were voted on by club owners, and we've seen Sheffield Wednesday, Derby, Reading, Aston Villa, Birmingham City, and there are rumours of another club in the Championship having done that as well in recent months, but I don't know how true that is, and I'll tell you the name of the club after the show. That's where we are. It's to stop this this creative accounting, and that's what it is. And creative accounting is where you go within the rules to boost profits or cut costs or to reduce profits with the objective of achieving a particular aim, which in the case of these clubs has been to be kept within financial fair play limits. And I'm not being critical of the clubs here, because they ultimately were simply applying the rules. You've got to question who created the rules. And again, I'm not even having a go at the EFL, because they inherited a set of suggestions from the Premier League.
There have been some changes at board level in the EFL, Kieran. Now, why does that affect us on the price of football? And why can't Findlay make his mind up which room he wants to be in? He's in and out of that. He's up and down like a bride's night.
There's a limit to the number of times he can listen to the word financial fair play without it playing havoc with his ears. Well, the reason why I think this is interesting is that the board of the EFL consists of three members from the Championship, two from League One, and one from League Two. And all three representatives from the Championship have effectively resigned. Nigel Howe at Reading, I think he's actually leaving the club, so therefore he doesn't qualify. Stephen Pearce at Derby County, and it says in the EFL press release, has left to concentrate on affairs at his own club. but I suspect it was due to the fact that every time he went into the EFL recreation room, there was a dartboard there with a picture of Pride Park on it. And he probably just said, I've had enough of this. And Mark Ashton at Bristol City, he's moved to Ipswich, who are in League One, so therefore he can't be a representative. So who is going to replace them? We're not certain, but it could have an impact upon the direction of the EFL. Which could be a very positive thing, these guys I'm sure have done a sterling job in history, but there are some things which concern me, because we've got one of the members at a non-championship club, one of the representatives at board level. I was just doing a little bit of a background check, and he also runs a company which is involved in buying and selling football clubs, and to me, I. That strikes me as a conflict of interest. How can you be on the board of an administrative body of football, and therefore you are having discussions of things about individual clubs, when you've got a separate job as somebody that's effectively a broker of football clubs? And why isn't this being – well, I presume it has been declared, but it just seems to me to be a strange way to have – governance at one of the senior institutions in English football.
This episode of The Price of Football is brought to you by the AI-powered workspace Notion. We are living in an era of information overload, and we have more knowledge than ever before. But what do we do with it all? If you're in Notion, you put that knowledge to work.
It's a workspace designed not just for making progress, but getting inspired. And all I can say on a personal level is, for somebody whose life is quite chaotic, and I'm writing pieces for government and newspapers and media content, I've got my university commitments and I'm supposed to be writing a book, I use Notion all the time because it brings order into chaos.
Well, if you need order brought to your chaos, you can try Notion for free when you go to notion.com/priceoffootball. That's all lowercase letters, notion.com/priceoffootball, and start turning your ideas into action. That's notion.com/priceoffootball.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Yeah, I agree, but I'm just thinking you evoked a very pleasing image of the EFL there having a staff room like Please Sir, with a dartboard with various people's faces being thrown out. For the younger people listening, Please Sir was a sitcom in the 70s where actors who were clearly in their mid-30s played 16-year-old kids at South London Comprehensive School.
And my mum wouldn't let me watch it. She said it was too rude.
It was raunchy, wasn't it? Yes. And they had a janitor played by Derek Giler who boasted about killing Nazis in the desert. Derek Giler, who was born two roads from where I'm doing this podcast, funny enough. It was quite raunchy, wasn't it? Maureen was the, I think she was the raunchy one, wasn't it? We just sound like two middle-aged men. Of course, those two stories, Kieran, were just a brief sorbet, a mere palate cleanser before we get back to completing the tour of our most talked about clubs recently. And for those of you who have Newcastle United on your accumulator, you can go to the bookies and get your money now. Because they're very much in the news this week, twice, basically. They and Amanda Staveley have gone to war, it says here. Gone to war against the Premier League and Tracy Crouch. That's very Sky Sports news, hasn't it? They've gone to war against the Premier League and Tracy Crouch.
Yes. This is all to do with the issue of the appeal by Newcastle United against the Premier League with regards to the prospective takeover by PIF of the club. And Newcastle have said, you know, why is this taking place behind closed doors? Why all the secrecy? Why all the delay? Why can't this be shown in the public domain? That I'm all in favour of, you know. And then Amanda Staveley effectively saying the deal's not dead, saying she again is effectively a broker of football clubs, or she wants to be with regards to Newcastle and the potential Saudi Arabia takeover. She's written an open letter to Tracy Crouch MP, and I'm going, well, what's it got to do with Tracy Crouch? Because she is not in a position to be able to force through a Premier League appeal. It's not within her remit, and it does appear to be a little bit of grandstanding from Amanda Staveley. She's trying to turn the narrative to go down the populist route, and you know, Tracy Crouch is presently in charge of the fan-led review of football. So I think by all means declare that you want this to be in the public domain and you want greater transparency, but if so, target the right people. Surely they should be targeting the sports manager, Nigel Dowden, if they think that it's within the government's remit. But the government has no power to do this. You know, there is no legislation, and if we're honest, in the present environment, there's probably one or two things more important than changing rules for football governance issues. I think there's an element of populism here which doesn't make me feel particularly at ease. And that's a shame, because the broad premise is, should there be more transparency with regards to football? Yes. What's stopping that? Well, in the Premier League, it's you need 14 votes to change the constitution to increase transparency. So ultimately, it's a decision made by club owners. And that's the same for the EFL. And there has to also to be an element of privacy. You know, public domain, what we're entitled to see, where does sort of governance end and just sort of naked nosiness begin? Yeah, it's a bit, you know, I'm not entitled to know the wages of football managers and football players. Yeah, we like to speculate when we're down the pub, but ultimately it's nothing to do with me. So I think what we should be gunning for is that these transactions are and these investigations are always taking far too long. Is there a way that that could be speeded up? Yes, there is, and that would be by having some form of independent regulator who is the adjudicator in football, and instead of the non-stop prevarications taken by both sides of arguments, it's somebody who can knock heads together and get things moving.
Yeah, it does seem to me, Kieran, that as we predicted some time ago, that this Saudi takeover hasn't gone away, and it's not gone away to the extent of thinking that it's inevitably going to happen eventually. But in the meantime, and again, I saw you chuntering about this on social media, Mike Ashley has extended Newcastle United's accounting date.
Yeah, and in a real world, who gives a flying one about this nonsense? But on the back of the story that Mike Ashley and Amanda Staveley want to see more transparency in the world of football, what this has done is it's delayed Newcastle publishing their accounts by another month. So, you know, did they make a profit in 2020? Did they not? Well, we're not going to know. And Mike Ashley specializes in this. So it's completely two-faced of him on the one side to say, well, you know, especially when you take into consideration the nature of the comments from Amanda Staveley, well, the fans deserve to know. Yeah, the fans deserve to know about the state of their football club from a financial perspective. Now, many of them don't give a hoot about it, and I perfectly understand why, but a small number might care because it is their club, it is their lifelong investment. If Mike Ashley is genuine about being transparent, why is it that Newcastle United are the only Premier League football club from 2019-20 to have published zero financial information with regards to how they coped with that season and the impact of COVID on their finances? We've got 18 clubs that have published full results. Your club, Palace, have published a one-page summary, which is better than nothing, and Newcastle have given us zip.
Accusations of hypocrisy notwithstanding, I'm sure Guy would like us to point out that he's acting perfectly legally, isn't he, by doing this?
Yes. Any company is entitled to extend or contract its accounting reporting date. But what he's done on the top of that, he's taken advantage of Rishi Sunak's 3-month extension in terms of when you have to publish results. So under normal circumstances, Newcastle United had a 30th of June year end, so you've got to publish your results by the 31st of March the following year. He's extended the year end to the 31st of July, and he's taken the extra 3 months from Rishi Sunak. So it's just Mike Ashley being Mike Ashley. For such a clever bloke, he just seems to get a strange pleasure from being this secretive and awkward.
In the bigger scheme of things, is it possible that the Saudi government, who are looking to take over the club, would be worried that Mike Ashley is appearing to be reluctant to reveal figures?
No, because I think we've spoken before is that if you're involved in a takeover deal, you actually get access to the up to date figures. We have this thing called a data room, so and you pay you normally pay a fee for the privilege of accessing the most up to date information. So the statutory accounts, to a large extent, are a complete irrelevance, because what you're looking at is what exactly does the club own. They'll have access to the individual wage deals with players and when they expire and how much they're for and what are the bonuses. Do you have any outstanding HP agreements and lease agreements? All of that stuff is in the data room. What you actually get to see in a set of statutory accounts is just the tip of the iceberg in terms of the overall finances.
Well, let's hope the Saudi government can afford that fee, Kieran. Otherwise, this could be going on for some time, couldn't it? The Gambling Commission has suspended the virtual transfer market Player FT's license.
Yes, this is this is echoes of our good non-friends at Football Index. And the reason for this is due to non-compliance with the Gambling Commission's self-exclusion rules for gamblers who you know might have a problem. And yeah, we've spoken to people on the show, and I know that some people say, you know, we're sort of taking a very you know holier than thou approach to the gambling industry. I've got friends that gamble. You have the occasional flutter. I'd have no issue with gambling, and you know having a license is good. I'm completely against prohibition. Although my uncle Terry was, you know, he's probably a little bit keener on unlicensed gambling, and that going back to the 70s when he and I used to go out together, he'd say, just need to go and pay a visit to this guy here about a gambling deck here, and I'd be sitting there, he'd go and buy me a funny face ice lolly, and then he'd sort of come out 30 seconds later and be this guy sort of leaning against a door with perhaps with one or two broken bones.
Yeah, but that's a separate story. At least you had an ice cream, Kieran.
Yeah, your funny faces were great.
Probably with a joke on the stick. I don't think it takes more than a pub psychologist, Kieran, to work out where your aversion to gambling may come from. it really doesn't need an expert, does it, to put two and two together. Good old Uncle Terry, though. It's nice that he kept you occupied.
That's right.
Just keep licking your lolly, son. He didn't see anything.
Yeah, right. I'll go and tell him the joke when he'd finished it as well. He'd chuckle away.
Of course he would. He's a good uncle.
He's a South London boy. but this is very similar to the nature of Football Index, whereby you're buying on the value of the players. But of course, you don't physically own the player. It's another way of relieving people of cash. And the whole point about having a responsible gambling industry, and this is where I think the industry keeps failing, is that it's a case of just turning the dial down a bit. You know, I get three or four emails and three or four texts a week from a gambling company, and I placed one bet this year, and as we know, that was a really depressing bet for me, because I bet on Crystal Palace to beat Brighton at the Amex just as an experiment, and I'm still getting this, and it's not coming from, it's not even coming from the company itself. It's, "Hi Kieran, it's Joe from William Hill. How are you doing?" Okay. I don't know anybody called Joe from William Hill. And then the next day, it's Sarah from William Hill. Is this another case of somebody holding a party in my honour and not inviting me, which tended to be the case with my birthday parties when I was growing up? It's the nature of the marketing of the industry and the behaviour of some of the players doesn't really reflect particularly well on the industry as a whole, and that's why there's presently some negativity which is justified against the industry.
Yeah, I'm always amazed that a betting company, even if they do it cynically, doesn't start to market themselves as the responsible betting company that will say, if you've gambled over a certain amount in a week, we won't let you gamble more. As I think that would probably give them a lot of publicity and new customers, but I think we're way off that phase yet, unfortunately. This is an odd one. If you're a Barcelona fan, Barcelona can't register any of their new signings, including Memphis Depay and Sergio Aguero, of course, because they've gone over the La Liga salary limit.
Yes, La Liga is intriguing in that each individual club is given a budget for wages at the start of the season, and that's done by La Liga itself. And you've got to comply. You've got to show that what you're committed to paying out this season is going to be within the limits, and it has broken over the course of the last 24 hours that it looks as if Barcelona have exceeded that, and what we've therefore got is they've got a fire sale. I think Junior Firpo is now going to Leeds at a pretty knockdown price. They've got Trincao going out to Wolves on loan. There's talk of Coutinho being available for sale for, you could probably get him for less than 20 million quid, and considering he was sold for the thick end of 130 only a few years ago, it just shows where they are. So, and I think the reason why they're trying to get all of these people out is at present, Lionel Messi is officially unemployed, isn't he?
Yeah,
because his
yeah.
his contract expired on the 30th of June. We're now into the first week of July, and there's no news coming from either party. The Barcelona president is making positive noises, but nothing coming from the Messi camp themselves.
I know we've discussed this before, Kieran, but just for new listeners and me, because we mentioned my attention span earlier, is the La Liga salary limit the same for every club, or does Barcelona or Real Madrid, you know, the bigger the club you are, do you get a little bit more leeway to spend money on salaries, or do they all get the same amount?
No, it's very much linked. It's what we probably call a soft cap in the sense that it is very much linked to your revenues. So,
okay.
That has some merits. It also has some demerits. If you are an ambitious club and you've just come up from the second division of Spanish football, you would start off with a very low wage cap, which means that if you've got an ambitious owner, it's going to be very difficult to ever be competitive with the large clubs in Spanish football.
Mm. Finally, Kieran, some news about us. This is our second to last ever pod for 2 weeks.
I thought you were about to tell me something. I didn't know.
That's what they call creating tension, Kieran. It's a little trick we have in our industry. Kieran has to source a new supply of wonky chomps, and Guy needs to go to the Caribbean to visit his money. So we're taking our first break since we started in October 2019, because when, as discussed, you already have a six-month backlog of questions, then taking a two-week holiday is a perfectly sensible thing to do. So we will have a questions pod as usual on Monday the 12th of July. Then we'll be back on Monday the 26th of July. But don't worry. If something big does happen, I'll still be here to do an emergency one-man factually incorrect pod. although I might have to phone Kieran to work, ask how the technology works. But in the meantime, if you'd like to make a small monthly contribution to our always free-to-air pod, then that would be very kind of you. Please go to patreon.com/priceoffootball. And if you have any questions to add to that pile, then email us on questions@priceoffootball.com. And before I hand you over to Kieran Maguire for our customary farewell, apologies, of course, to any Bulgarian listeners who are waiting for that amortization story I made up at the top of the programme.
Well, once again, folks, thanks for the feedback. Through the podcast app and social media, we do listen. We do try to take on board your comments. If you could give us a review, give us 5 stars. It according to producer Guy, and be honest, Kevin and I are absolutely clueless when it comes to this. It helps us in the charts. It helps us when we're trying to get some guests, and we are trying to negotiate with some guests from the world of football too. So when we return in a couple of weeks, it just adds to our credibility, because the credibility of two old blokes from South London is pretty low in the normal world, but your help with your reviews makes all the difference.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
The Price of Football. Price of Football.